Last week we took a minute before the sermon, or I don't know, at some point during the service, to acknowledge someone who's put in so much time and effort on behalf of our congregation and our moving towards accessibility. And we thanked Dave Gologli, who I don't even think was here, and I'm not sure he's here right this minute either. But in the spirit of being grateful to those who do for us on a regular basis, I want to invite the choir members to stand up and be appreciated, please. And not least Laura, who plays the piano all the time that Yukiko isn't, and Michael, who brings it all together. Aren't we blessed to have this music in our lives and the spirit it brings to us? I have a note to myself that I started last week. I'm going to do it every week. It says, take off shoes. Something about being a little grounded in this pulpit that I'm thinking will be a good idea. I was also thinking this week that I had so much I wanted to say in thinking about and researching this sermon, and I've been immersed in thinking about life and the craziness that it is right now and the wonder that it is, every nuanced and altering and amazing part of it. So that I carry you with me all week, all of you. You may not be aware that you're being hoisted all over the place, but you are. And I am grateful for your company. So thank you for that. I was part of the body, Madeline L'Engle said this morning. That's what it's all about. If you're not familiar, she wrote the classic children's book, A Wrinkle in Time, among others. Part of the whole, she said, the joy of being an instrument in the great orchestra. And don't we all want to be that? To be a part of something, to be worthy and accepted and acknowledged, to be loved, to contribute to this life in some way that amplifies the music. It is total grace when we figure that out, how and where we fit into the show, the big show that she referenced. Phyllis Tickle's book, The Great Emergence, deals with this big show in a way. If you did not see or read the e-news this week, I mentioned Tickle's book, which is about her premise that the Christian church changes every 500 years or so. It doesn't exactly turn on a dime. But that big things happen, right? So she references, for example, Jesus, and then 500 years later, Gregory the Great, who instituted the first large-scale mission to convert pagans. And then 500 years later, the Great Schism, separating the Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic churches. And then 500 years later, the Great Reformation, separating Protestantism from Catholicism. So that now we are due, at least the Christian church, she says, writ large, is due. Which means Western society and culture are feeling a big shift of some sort. And I would imagine we are all feeling a shift, right? It has been going on for a while within religious institutions themselves and beyond. The questions that come up around big cultural shifts often play out in challenging us to think about what we're anxious about, what we want to hold on to, or what we're willing to let go of, since change doesn't come without loss. Anything new requires letting go of something old. We know that. And then there is this in-between time. My friend Nancy Crumbine, who preached here last spring, I don't know if you remember her, she had white hair about down to here, and she's kind of wild and crazy. She uses the image of an orangutan as it releases one branch reaching out and before it latches on to the next branch. She refers to that place in between, the mid-flight, if you will, and says that that's where God is, by which she means that's where we experience possibility and grace. In the Buddhist tradition, it is painted slightly differently, perhaps. Shift your perspective vertical. That time when one is falling with nothing to hold on to, drifting slowly downward, and yet knowing, in fact, there is no bottom. That liminal space. Neither, in some respects, the orangutan detached from both sides or the eternally falling sounds especially reassuring at first glance. I happened to be watching a YouTube video of Meryl Streep the other day. It's been going around again, so maybe you've seen it. It's the 2010 commencement speech at Barnard College. And she detailed to the young women who were being graduated and on the cusp of entering their adult lives the varieties of challenges in front of them, all kinds of things contemporary to 2010. And this is the place, she said, where the need is very great. This is your time, and it feels normal to you, but really, there is no normal. There's only change and resistance to it, and then more change. Is that what life is then? This mid-flight? The falling with no bottom? Don't we yearn for something more solid than that? Are the places of solid real or illusion? I wonder if there have been times in your life when solid felt real. There may have been or may still be parts of it that feel reliable and whole, and I hope so. But one wonders if those are the places sometimes that also hold us back. So a number of years ago, my son, who was then, 12 or 13 or 14, came into the kitchen, and he would typically kind of enter the room from nowhere and then stand there and wait till I noticed him. Can I help you? So he was trying to figure out, he said, why one should apply oneself to the task of learning, which isn't exactly how he put it. He may have said something like, why do I have to do my homework? At any rate, he said, I get why you have to work hard in high school so that you can go to college. But then why would you work hard in college? So I'm thinking, how do I answer this in a way that I don't lose him entirely? Well, so I think what happens, I said, was you work hard in high school so you can get to college. And then when you get to college, you can study whatever you want. So he's taking that in a little bit, and he says, so you're telling me after high school, I don't have to take a foreign language, I don't have to study history, I don't have to read English books that I don't care about? Right. And I wondered exactly what it was he was going to do in college if he ever made it there. So aside from speaking to the learning opportunity that high school perhaps wasn't for my child, the story does illustrate how having a target that one is moving towards, that one feels invested in moving towards, can inform one's present. So for example, we set goals. We study, we learn, we test well, and we achieve a degree. That takes planning and intention. It takes forward thinking. And with the degree, one sees down the road maybe a job, and in our culture, as the story goes, save money, buy a house, have a family, be happy. But what happens when we don't have a strong sense of the target? Or when the target is somehow elusive? What happens when we find ourselves in that liminal space, that between space? We have a degree, but no job yet. We have a job, but no partner. We have a partner, but something changes and they choose something else. And then here we are again in that threshold space between the old tree and the new. How do we manage that always changing space, which, if we can believe Phyllis Tickle, at least relative to our theological understanding, our meaning making, is more present now, that space than it has been for quite some time. Did you know that Charles Darwin was a Unitarian? At least that's what we say. I should actually check before I testify to that. But it's not the strongest of the species that survives, he said, nor the most intelligent. The one that survives is the one that is the most adaptable to change. There is tension always between living in the present and planning for the future. It is so important for us to show up every day, to notice the details, to engage with the joys and the sorrows of the here and now, to be mindful. And also to know that we all exist in a context that includes what we have come from, those seeds planted by others, and also what we are headed towards, that we plant, what we will leave when our turn is past. So it's not wrong to plan forward. The problem is only when we get so attached to our plans that we are lost when they don't turn out exactly the way we thought they would or should. You're likely familiar with some variation on the Yiddish proverb, "We plan, God laughs." And again, always end. There is something to be said for looking forward, particularly for imagining how we might invest in today, such that the future might be, in some respects, the results of our efforts to improve what we feel and know we might do better. If we can't guarantee the results of our plans, at the very least, we can imagine ourselves into them. Sometimes the imagining is the best we can do. But between the time we're in the present and the space where our imagining comes to fruition, are we in a time of struggle or opportunity? How do we imagine, how do we manage that middle time? I was watching a video of the woman who originated the Me Too campaign, which has been so much in the news this week. Her name is Tarana Burke. She is a longtime advocate for victims of sexual assault. She started the campaign 10 years ago, and I'd guess she had no idea where it might end up. She could not have planned what has happened. But it has resurfaced, as we know, as a result of an actress, Alyssa Milano's, who suggested that victims reply to her tweet or change their online status to Me Too if they have experienced assault in their lives. The point being to draw attention to the magnitude of the problem. The current response has been huge. What's next? The interviewer asked Tarana Burke recently, as though she could have planned any of what's now. "We keep going," she replied. "We keep going." There is courage required to live in the liminal space, the in-between space. I was reminded recently that for our Jewish friends, the High Holy Days, which are just past, are such places between the time when one lets go of the past year's failures, seeking forgiveness in anticipation of moving on and waiting without knowing for sure whether one will be written into the book of life. In some sense, we are always in that place. But we must also have the courage to imagine ourselves forward, to imagine what we want the world to be so that we can apply ourselves to it. So let's try it on for size this morning. What do we see in front of us? And what beckons each of us forward? And do we have the courage to imagine it so that we might create a path to travel towards it? In this particular 500-year round of what Tickle calls the rummage sale, when we clean out our old forms of spirituality and replace them with new ones, I wonder what we are each and what we are collectively willing to let go of. How is it we imagine ourselves forward in our spiritual lives? We are not the church that says you have to believe this or that. We are not the church that assures us a place in heaven. We are not the church that guarantees much of anything except the knowledge that we are stronger together, than we are apart, and that love is what holds us up. Love for ourselves and our imperfections, love for others and theirs, love for the gift of all life, all its creatures, and the very earth that sustains us. And we know we don't get new things without losing old things. So even if you happen to keep the old things and you're surrounded by all this stuff, metaphorically even, the old things don't exist in the same position as they did before. Everything shifts. So what is in our great emergence? We might ask ourselves, how will my spiritual life change if I imagine being more loving? If I imagine being a better listener? If I imagine being more mindful? If I imagine a more just world? If I imagine being a part of the whole, having a new part in the play, a new instrument in the orchestra? It's exciting, this space of imagination. A little scary and very exciting, because we can become those things right now, every day, and our futures will be different. Maybe Nancy is right after all. Maybe the liminal space is where God is, however we might imagine that. Where possibility exists, where grace is available, where potential lives, in that brave space of reaching, of being willing to let go without the security of the next grasp. We just need a little courage to imagine ourselves forward. No doubt, love will guide us.